Hey everyone, we've got a brand new sponsor,
BagsUnlimited.com.
BagsUnlimited.com has a huge catalog of vinyl supplies, from record sleeves to storage boxes to cardboard mailers, record bags, and more. Whether you're just starting your collection or you're already the biggest record shop in the state, you can buy your vinyl supplies direct at BagsUnlimited.com.
And now, on with the show.
Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Oh, well, hello, hello, everyone. Nate here, back from a short break. I did a double episode week with Jack Douglas, so I took last week off, and I wish I could tell you I was totally refreshed, but that ain't the truth. I'm actually busier than ever, and part of that's because The Vinyl Guide podcast is really doing great. So, again, thank you everyone who listens regularly, shares on social media, tells their friends. That's a huge help. So, today, we've got a fantastic guest. He's been on before, but so much has happened since. It's Charlie Benante of Anthrax. However, we don't talk much about Anthrax at the moment. They're in between album cycles, so we'll probably have an Anthrax-related conversation later in the year. But today, Charlie and I are going to cover a few other things, quite thoroughly, in fact. We talk about Charlie's recent tour with Pantera and the upcoming Record Store Day single, Chafed GBI, a collaboration with Dave Grohl and Scott Ian. And of course, we talk about Charlie's collecting hobby. He's very much a collecting nerd like the rest of us, but it's not all records. So lots of interesting talk on this one. Please enjoy. And just a reminder, make sure to put Chafed GBI, that's Grohl, Benante, and Ian, the single, the regulator, put that on top of your Record Store Day grab list. There's a limited pressing for Record Store Day. I believe it's April 20th. Good luck getting one. Plus, all the proceeds of this record go to help the members of Bad Brains through their recent health challenges. So again, very limited run on this one, Chafed GBI. It's a win-win-win, so put it at the top of your Record Store Day get list. And hey, one last thing before we start the interview, make sure to follow The Vinyl Guide in your podcast app. It helps you get access to all sorts of other great interviews, such as Matt Cameron of Soundgarden and Pearl Jam, episode 425. Justin Chancellor of Tool was on, episode 417. Peter Hook of Joy Division, episode 412. Jay Maskus of Dinosaur Jr., episode 393. Jason Bonham, discussing his dad and playing with Led Zeppelin, episode 383. Chris Shiflett of the Mighty Foo Fighters was on, episode 382. And heaps, heaps more. There's no paywall. Simply follow The Vinyl Guide in your podcast app and enjoy all 400 plus episodes and interviews. And with that, let's get into our conversation with Mr. Charlie Benante of Anthrax, Pantera, and Chafed GBI. Ladies and gentlemen, this week on The Vinyl Guide, very stoked to have with us Mr. Charlie Benante, and we are going to be talking about this very interesting release for Record Store Day, Chafed GBI. How are you today, Charlie?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. I could use some of that Benante blend coffee, but we'll have to wait till you get to Australia for that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You bringing some with you?
I am.
Oh, excellent. All right. Can't wait to try it. Sounds like I'll be shot out of a cannon once I get some. All right. Let's talk Chafed GBI, because I'm a complete record nerd. And when I saw the Record Store Day release list, this one popped out of me. Chafed GBI. Can you tell me the story of this project?
Okay, so we were recording another batch of songs for the Anthrax record, and we were at Dave Grohl's studio 606. And it was the last day of recording, and Dave stopped in a couple of days prior to that to just come and hang and say hi and everything like that. And on the last day, the Foo Fighters were in another room, rehearsing for some shows they were about to do. So Scott texted me and said, hey, could you get down here soon? Dave wants to do a song. So I'm like, yeah, okay, what song? So he's like, I don't know, maybe a Minor Threat song or a Bad Brain song. So I said, okay, cool, let me know. And then we started texting, and it turns out it was going to be a Bad Brain song. And we decided to do it for Record Store Day, and we decided that all the proceeds would go to help the members of the Bad Brains who are having some health issues. So all the proceeds from this go to them. So I get down there and we start going over the song, and Dave thought I was going to play drums, but Frankie, our bass player, he had already left. So I was like, well, Frankie left. So I said, you play drums. And he's like, I don't want to play drums. I'm like, yeah, no, you got to play drums. I'm going to play bass and Scott will play guitar. So that was it. We went over the song maybe two times, and then we just recorded it live, the three of us. And then Dave sang it, and it was that simple. And it came out so great. And my only issue is, why didn't we do more? You know? And then about a week or so later, I started working on the cover, and I wanted it to be something that I associated the Bad Brains with in New York City, and CBGBs came up. So I decided to put the three members of this collaboration in like a Jack in a Box, because the song is just, you know, to me it sounds like it's just an energetic song, you know what I mean? So I just have us popping out of these Jack in the Boxes and in front of CBGBs. So that was the idea I had. And then the three of us were going over, what do we call this thing? And someone, I don't know who, mentioned the GBH thing. I think I said that the initials were like Grohl, my last name, and Scott's last name. So it was GBI. So I immediately thought of the GBH logo. And then we couldn't think of what should go with it. Like, it says Charge GBH. So Grohl came up with Chafed GBI. And that was it. That stuck. And I guess you'll hear it when it comes out.
So we've heard the Bad Brains version, obviously, and that's like a little over a minute long. Is this track just that short as well? Is it a minute eight or whatever it is?
It stays true to the original. Yes.
Excellent.
And that's why I was kind of like, after the fact, I was kind of bummed that we didn't, you know, do another song or you know, I mean, we had the time, but actually Dave had to go and rehearse. So, which was a whole funny story, because it's like, I spent the day kind of like with him. After we finished this, he went over to rehearse with the Foo Fighters. And then about an hour or so, I walked over there and the bass player hadn't showed up. So Dave's like, play bass. So I played bass on like Monkey Wrench. And then that went into another song, but I didn't play Monkey Wrench that well because I totally forgot it, you know, and I forgot to, the E string is tuned down to D, which I completely forgot, and I wish someone would have reminded me. But anyway, I'm going off here on another kind of tangent.
You're watching Dave's bar chords and trying to keep up with kind of what you're playing. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I haven't played that song in like 20 years or something. But anyway, so that was my day, and it was fun. It was just a fun day. It was a foo day.
A foo day. So you guys are in Studio 606. What makes Studio 606 such a great place to record?
Because Dave owns it.
Yeah, he owns it, but I mean, comparing to other studios that you've been at.
No, I'm... Of course. It has all the aesthetics that make up a great studio. It has a great live room. It has the sound of it is awesome. The people there are awesome. They are so accommodating and just so friendly, and everything just goes so smoothly. And they just have the right tech on the technical side of things. It's a great board. It's the board that was in Sunset Sound. So of course that board is it has a history recording some of the greatest records that were recorded. And like I said, it was just the vibe. It's just the feeling you get when you walk in there. Like I when I was playing my drums, I actually said that I could play all day because that's how good the room sound and the drum sound. It was just like a perfect marriage. So we were completely happy with the sound of it.
It sounds like just a lot of studios are created by people who are come from various businesses. This sounds like 606 was created with Dave's vision. So it's kind of built by musicians for musicians with the whole experience in mind.
Exactly. I would say that he is one of those people that, yes, the attention to detail is very important, but the soul of it, the essence of it, has got to be real. And like I said, that's what it feels like when I was in there. It was just very real, you know?
Mm-hmm. So you guys chose to do The Regulator. What other songs were bandied about? You said you were talking about a Minor Threat song. What were some of the other options you guys were throwing back?
Waiting Room was one by Minor Threat. What else was thrown out there? Another Bad Brand song. Was it Sailing On? I forget what it was now, but yeah, some songs, some other song. We should have just went right into it and, you know, mm-hmm. not stopped.
Yeah, play that whole first album. That'd be amazing.
Oh, yeah, that was great.
So you guys didn't run through any of the other songs and settle on The Regulator. You guys just said, okay, that's the one we're doing, and that's the one you focused on wholly.
Yeah, because like I said, Dave had to go rehearse, so it wasn't like we had all day to do it. And we were actually still recording some of the Anthrax songs.
Did you guys think about it as a charity or as something, or was it kind of a goof on the day?
It first started out as we're all here, let's record something. And then it turned into a benefit for the Bad Brains. So that's how it went.
Yeah, because HR, I know, has been struggling with his health, and I think there's been some GoFundMe set up for it. So on that day, you guys are saying, let's do something nice for HR.
Yes, and Dr. No.
And Dr. No, okay. Now, at what point did it turn into a Record Store Day thing? That same day? Was that the whole plan was conceived right there on that day?
No, the Record Store Day thing came later on. When we were thinking about how to release it. And then of course Record Store Day came into our minds because on that day people look for special things, and this was a special thing. So mm-hmm. yeah. So that's how that all came about. Let's release it on Record Store Day in April.
So everyone, if you don't already have this on your list, Chafe GBI, April 20th, there's only 3,000 copies made, so that'll go very, very quick. Now, do you know anything about the vinyl? Is it going to be black, colored, swirly?
It's black. Like
black?
It's okay. Black, and then on the back of it, it has our names etched in on the B-side of it, and I thought it was 3,500 copies.
Okay. Yeah, my news is 3,000, but it could be more.
I could be wrong.
Well, it is limited, 35 or 3,000. they probably won't last long. And the proceeds are going to benefit Bad Brains members. That's
correct.
That's phenomenal. So you guys in Studio 606, I remember at one point you were talking about, or you'd shared that you're thinking about, rather than focusing on albums, potentially EPs were the future. Are you still thinking that way? Or are you still thinking albums?
Trust me, I'm still thinking like just a collection here and then the next collection after that. But I think the majority want to go with a full record. So I guess that's the route we're going to take, is put out a full record. Either way, it's fine with me. I just feel that the hardcore Anthrax fan wants a full record. And then maybe some people have a hard time digesting all that material nowadays. So I felt maybe putting it out as, here's the first half. Okay, do you like that? Good. Get used to it, because now here's the second half. More songs, you know?
All right. So it could go either way at this point.
Yeah, but it's probably going to go the full record.
Okay.
But I would like to put one song or I should say, we'd like to put a song out by spring, summer, you know?
Okay. A little tease.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then maybe gear up for it. Because you're on the road with Pantera. Scott's doing Bungle.
Yeah.
And then probably what in the summer, it's going to be an Anthrax summer, I would imagine.
It'll be Anthrax fall.
Anthrax fall. Okay. And with the different projects you're doing, because you're getting ready to come to Australia in a couple of weeks. Actually, Scott's already in Australia. We're going to see him this weekend with Bungle. With these other projects that you have going on outside of Anthrax, I imagine there's some lessons learned and some things that you guys are bringing back from those projects into Anthrax.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Subconsciously, you know, you kind of, things creep in both ways. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
For me, the Pantera thing is a very special thing. I think it's one of those opportunities to A, honor your friends, B, play some songs that you love, and C, give the audience a chance to hear these songs in this environment again, some who had never seen Pantera before. And yes, I know this isn't the original Pantera. I have to be a fucking idiot to not know that. This version of Pantera is, of course, with Zach and myself. You know, we are staying true to what the band was.
Look, there's lots of people that will judge bands who are touring with partial members. Obviously, Pantera can never go back to the original four. But
no,
look, the Buzzcocks are about to tour Australia. And someone said, well, Pete Shelley's no longer with the band. It's like, well, there's no option. I'd rather take half the Buzzcocks than no Buzzcocks. So when developing the tour, you knew Vinny after Dimebag's passing. Did Vinny ever talk about the possibility of playing as Pantera or playing those songs again?
I mean, I never had a full conversation with him about it because it was never something that would be brought up when I was together with him. You know what I mean? When we were together, we talked about different things. Never like reforming the band again. And that was it. You know, it was his brother wasn't there. I don't know, you know, maybe I did hear at one point Vinny was open to do it again, but I don't know if that was real or not. And that was it. You know, when I was hanging with Vinny after the fact, I mean, I remember Hell Yeah were with Anthrax. We did the whole Pacific Rim area, and it was such a great time because Vinny and I were so crazy about this Van Halen record that came out called A Different Kind of Truth.
Oh yeah.
And we were just going nuts over it, and we were just talking about it and vibing on it. And then we were on the bullet train, and the night before that Vinny said to me, did you ever get into like For Unlawful Carnal Knowledge or Balance or anything like that? And I'm like, man, I missed the boat on those records, you know, and I don't know why I missed the boat on it, but I did. And he's like, bro, you got to give this another chance. So on the bullet train, we listened to those records, and I have a different appreciation for those records now because of Vinny, and I associate those records with him.
Hmm. Yeah, in recent days, the news emerged of Alex Van Halen's book coming out. You've heard about that, I imagine. I can't wait to get a copy of that.
Yeah, that would be cool to read about that stuff. Because you know, I'm such a huge Van Halen fan. I mean, I have a tattoo on my arm, a Van Halen tattoo. They meant so much to me, man, growing up. And you know, that's one of the reasons why the kit that I use on stage has like these four kick drums. Two of them are real, two are kind of facades, but to the kid who's all the way across the arena looking at it, it just looks massive. And that's the way it looked to me when I would see Van Halen. It was huge. And it's, for me, it's just a way of kind of bringing that style back.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get to meet or spend any time with Eddie or Alex?
Only Eddie, never Alex.
Yeah. What was the memory on that?
Oh man, the first time I met Eddie was a sad environment because it was at Daryl's funeral. And we were in the family room, and it was me. Vinny was sitting with me, and Rex had just gotten there too. And so Rex was sitting next to me, and Eddie came walking in with his assistant, Matt. And I noticed that Eddie was carrying a guitar too. And he came right over to us, and he crouched down, put the guitar down on the floor and crouched down and was talking to us and just was saying how sorry he was. And I noticed on the guitar case, it had a piece of tape that was there for like forever. And it said VH2 on it. And Daryl's favorite Van Halen guitar was the Bumblebee, which was off of Van Halen 2. Mm-hmm. And he opens the guitar and he says, "I brought this for your brother." And it was the guitar from the back of Van Halen 2. And then we went into the other room, and then he placed the guitar in the coffin with Daryl, and we all lost it. Right now, I'm thinking about it, and I get choked up just thinking about it because it was such a special moment. And that was my first encounter with Eddie Van Halen, and it was very surreal.
Wow, how generous is that? That's amazing.
No, it was an amazing. What I was seeing in front of me was something that almost felt like a dream. It was absolutely a very emotional moment, and I will never forget that.
Wow. It sounds like you've had other moments, happier moments with Eddie after that. Yeah.
I saw Eddie again, maybe two times after that. Nothing could ever compare to the first moment that I saw him do that. And yeah. I mean, Eddie's just, to me, was someone who was, I don't even know if it was like, it's like how a lot of kids back in the day when they were growing up, especially growing up in my time, you looked up to these athletes who were larger than life. And I mean, back then when I was growing up, you really didn't have a lot of musicians at the time. You know, you looked up to the Beatles, the Zeppelins and you know, the Kiss. When Van Halen came out, for me, that was a completely different thing. It changed the way people looked at guitar, the way people played guitar. It was a moment in time that it just revolutionized guitar playing. And I don't think anyone, yes, there's been little tiny things here and there that have happened, but nothing like the Van Halen experience.
Someone pointed this out to me, and I think it's absolutely true. With all the different rock stars we grew up in, I think you and I are the same generation. You know, we saw Led Zeppelin and, you know, the Doors, those sort of bands. None of them looked like they were having as much fun as Eddie Van Halen did. He was always smiling, always grinning. That whole band, really, they were always having a good time. That is a huge attractor, and I think a huge differentiator when it comes to Van Halen. Not only was the musicianship there, but fuck, you wanted to be them because they looked like they were just having fun all the time.
100%. Like those records, they put the party in the record. When you're playing a Van Halen record with your friends, you have no choice but to enjoy it and just be in that kind of festive mood, because the way it's coming across is they're recording this stuff and they're having the fucking time of their lives. And when you would go see them, how could anyone leave a Van Halen show disappointed? You would just so elated. And that to me is where music suffers nowadays. No one does this stuff anymore. There's no rock stars anymore. And I remember there was a time when it was a shitty thing to say, you know, rock stars. Remember in the 90s, the whole grunge thing kind of tried to eliminate the rock star. I mean, to me, when I would see Kiss or Led Zeppelin, these people are stars. They're musical stars, just like their actors are, you know, screen stars, you know. And nowadays, it's not like that. But it's funny when we do like VIP, like the meet and greet type of things, and people come to say hi to us and take a picture with us. You could just see their faces light up. And to me, that's important to me, to make every single one of those people come in and you just have some little thing back and forth with them. It's like, for me, when I was, you know, a younger fan, it made an impression on me, and it's important to make those people feel special.
Yeah. So Pantera's getting ready to come to Australia. Yes. Anyone listening from Sydney, Melbourne, or Brisbane, it's the Knotfest, late March, knotfestau.com. On the set list, are you guys playing any songs that weren't played live from the original Pantera?
You forgot to mention Adelaide.
Adelaide's in there too? Okay, sorry. Yeah. Everyone forgets Adelaide.
Well, there's a song that we've been playing on this last run that we did, a song called Floods, and they didn't play that song much at all. And so we were playing, you know, we had a whole bunch of other songs that we were playing throughout the year, last year too. And we kind of take some out, put some in, and see how it feels. This current run that we did in February was so good. We love the way the songs work with each other and the crowd responds. So I think we're going to kind of try and keep it like that.
Have you discussed it doing a live recording of this tour or any recording with the four of you?
Yeah. We talked about that.
Oh, okay. All right. Sounds like that's a potential hopeful conclusion there.
Yeah, we'll see. You know, we record a lot, and it's probably just spending time with it and see which shows are good and what, or take a song from this show or a song from that show and compile it on a for a live record. You know, I would love to do that.
Do you know if there's any unfinished or unreleased Pantera tracks that may be able to be revived?
We'll be right back after we pay some bills.
Hey there, all you record nerds. I want to tell you about BagsUnlimited.com. BagsUnlimited.com has a huge selection of vinyl record supplies. Whether you collect LPs, 7-inch singles, 78 shellacs, or anything in between, BagsUnlimited.com will sort you out. From polyline sleeves to cardboard record mailers to 7-inch storage boxes and archive quality record sleeves, protect your records of any size and shape at BagsUnlimited.com. Whether you have a small personal record collection or you're running a massive record shop, you can grab a small supply or even buy in bulk at BagsUnlimited.com. And they've got some really incredible, unique stuff. BagsUnlimited.com even has special size sleeves made especially to protect your box sets, storage boxes and sleeves for cassette tapes, protective supplies for reel-to-reel, and yes, even 8-tracks.
Oh, a great googly moogly.
Just go to BagsUnlimited.com, click on audio supplies, and prepare to be impressed by all the options they have. That's BagsUnlimited.com. Well, hey there, record collectors. There's a new service available that specializes in record cleaning, restoring, sticker removal, and professional grading.
VMGVinyl.com.
VMG Vinyl can help you make the most of your collectible records. From professional cleaning of records and sleeves,
removing old price tags and store stickers,
dry cleaning and rejuvenation of old shrink wrap to make it look like new, even providing you a professional, play-tested, third-party grade with either removable grading or encasing in plastic, you have a wide range of choices at VMGVinyl.com.
Buying a highly collectible record and you want it checked out by an expert?
VMG Vinyl can do that too. Head over there now and see what VMGVinyl.com can do for you and your collection. That's VMGVinyl.com, the one-stop shop for professional third-party grading, cleaning, and record restoration. That's VMGVinyl.com.
Hey there, I gotta tell you about the Groove Washer. Not because I have to, but because I want to. The Groove Washer is the best record cleaner you can get. And if you have a vinyl collection, you need to keep it clean. Dirt and dust lead to groove wear, which affects the sound and value of your record collection. Use the Groove Washer to clean before each play, and your ears and future pocketbook will thank you. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store, or go direct to groovewasher.com and use promo code VinylGuide10 at checkout. Groove Washer is a great holiday gift. Why not send one to a friend? Groovewasher.com, discount code VinylGuide10. Do it now.
Please support the Vinyl Guide sponsors. Now, back to the show.
Do you know if there's any unfinished or unreleased Pantera tracks that may be able to be revived?
I don't know. I don't know about that.
Okay. We'll put that one out in the universe and see what happens.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, look, Charlie, I understand you're a bit of a collector yourself. Perhaps not records so much, but film memorabilia. Is that right?
So a little bit on that side of stuff. But mostly it's kind of like toy collecting and even a lot of music memorabilia type of stuff.
Ooh, okay.
Because back in the day, when I first started to go on tour, days off to me were my like a safari hunt. You know what I mean? I would just go out to record stores, old toy stores and pawn shops and stuff like that. And man, I would just scour the city for cool stuff.
And what are some of those things that you would look for and bring back home?
I mean, back in the day when we first started touring, I was looking for the holy grail of vinyl things. And that was a Beatles Butcher Baby cover.
Oh.
And we did an in-store one time in the 80s. And I saw one and I got it. And very happy about that. But that was a long, long time ago. So that was one thing that was accomplished. And then just toy stuff, you know, whether it be a fucking Evel Knievel wind up toy, or when the Simpsons hit, there was a whole thing of Simpsons stuff that was released early on, and I managed to get like a lot of that. And then the movie Jaws has always been a personal favorite of mine. And God, about was it 15 years ago, I helped a friend, let's say, with a book, and I didn't want anything, no money for it, but he said, I can get you a barrel from the movie Jaws because I know the people who worked on the movie. And that's what he did, and he got me a barrel from the movie, and I was so happy about that. And that's like a prized possession. And I'll never forget bringing it to where Richard Dreyfuss was and talked to Richard Dreyfuss for a while, and he signed the barrel for me. And it was just such a goofy thing, but to me it meant a lot.
So like in the movie, if do you know which parts of the movie that particular barrel is in?
I don't even know if it was in the movie. It could, you know.
It could be a barrel.
Yeah, it could be a barrel. But it was the Wrangler on the movie Jaws, Mr. Murphy. He had all the props. He took care of all that stuff. And then he had since passed, but his wife still had some of it in her possession. And that's who I got it from. So I know it's authentic.
Yeah, the provenance is there. Right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
All right. And it's got Richard Dreyfuss' signature. So there we go. It's a Jaws.
And that's a story. You know what I mean? Richard Dreyfuss, you know, talked to me about it. And, you know, I'm so interested in the Jaws, you know, the minutiae. I mean, I have to know everything about that movie.
Mm-hmm. Just Jaws 1. Cause my son and I just watched Jaws 3, the 3D one.
No.
Yeah.
No.
You don't have anything from that, do you?
No, no, no. Oh, the only thing I have from Jaws 3 is agita.
Yeah, regret.
Regret. I wasted all this time. And even, you know, Jaws 2 for me, yeah, there's a little bit of charm there with that movie, but for the most part, it kind of falls a bit flat for me.
That franchise wrapped up pretty quick, but that first one.
you can't beat the first one. I mean, every aspect of it, storytelling, acting, music, anything you want in a successful movie, that's it. Just watch that and learn how to make a movie.
100%. It still totally holds up. So you got this Jaws barrel. What else do you have in your collection? Toys, records, movie stuff?
Yeah, you know, a lot of vinyl stuff, a lot of toy stuff. I'm a huge Funko fanatic. I have too many of those. But a lot of times if I'm at a convention with other, whether it be actors or stuff, I'll get them to sign my Funkos. Like Linda Blair signed my stuff. John Travolta actually gave me a Vincent Vega from Pulp Fiction. He signed it for me. That's one of my prized possessions. John Travolta gave me that. And that to me was the greatest. It's the little things, man.
Sure. No, that's fantastic. The fact that you've got these collections, they bring you joy. I mean, most of the listeners here are record nerds, so yeah, we totally get it.
I love shopping for, or what I call the hunt. If I'm on the hunt for something, the fun about it is the hunt for it. You know, when you finally can get a sealed copy of something that you've been waiting for or you never thought you would get. And then, oh my God, here it is. You know, that to me is, I don't care how old I am. It doesn't matter to me. Yeah. It's that to me is the thing that gets my blood fucking going.
So if you find something sealed, do you unseal it or do you keep it sealed?
I keep it sealed.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah.
If there's, because I would have already owned an unsealed copy of it, but it probably wasn't in the best condition. So I'd have to have the sealed copy that is just pristine.
I totally get it. I feel if something's been sealed for 40 years, I'm not going to be the one to undo that.
No. And it's the same thing for me with instruments. Like snare drums, they have different characteristics. They have a certain sound to them. Guitars, there's a reason why. I have so many guitars, but there are only a few that I feel have so many songs in them. Back when I joined the band, Scott had this Charvel Starbody guitar that when I played it, I immediately just, there was something about this guitar, and he sold it to me. And I wrote pretty much 85% of the Anthrax materials written from that guitar. It had so many songs in it, and I was just like a vessel, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And there are maybe three or four more guitars that I own that have that same quality to it, or there's something about them. Yeah, and that's another thing. Guitars to me have something.
So that Charvel guitar, are you still using that? Is that, I mean, some of the songs on the new album came from that still?
There's probably a handful, maybe two or three that were written off of that guitar. Another guitar that I have, my friend Paul Crook, who actually was in Anthrax for a bit, a friend of his was making guitars. And this is a special story too. And this is going back a long time ago, probably about 20, 25 years ago. And I wanted an Eddie Van Halen Shark guitar. It's the one that Eddie cut up from a Ibanez Destroyer. And Mark made one for me. And when I got the guitar, there was something about this guitar. I don't know what it is, but it just, like the Charvel. And I started to just immediately come up with riffs, songs, whatever. And about a year after I got that guitar, Paul reached out to me to tell me that Mark had passed, and I couldn't believe it. But the thing about it was this guitar was so special. I don't know if Mark knew something that he didn't tell anybody, but this guitar is, I'm looking at it right now, it just has this quality and there's something special about it and the spirit in it, you know, that Mark made this guitar and gave it to me. And a lot of the Anthrax and the songs from the past couple of years have been written from that guitar.
Sometimes these unexplained things happen and you just gotta thank whatever angels you have in your life for bestowing them upon you.
Oh, I do. I do. There's a, you know, there's a couple of things that we all associate Daryl with, the number three, and especially 333. It pops up so many times with me. And the other day I was driving with my daughter. We were coming out of a Starbucks drive-thru, and there was a car there with a license plate that read two letters, DD, you know, Daryl, and it had 333 on it. And it was driving away. I wanted to get a picture to show everybody because we have group text that will always put the threes on it. And that was something that was pretty special, but it happens all the time, the 333.
Wow. I mean, even on this, on the tour, feeling the presence of Daryl and Vinny, any sort of bittersweet things that happen?
The first show that we played in Mexico City, Sterling Whitfield, who was the band, he engineered a few of the band's records. Sterling came to the show and he brought me two things. He brought me a pair of Vinny's gloves, used gloves. It even had blood on it from Vinny, from his like blisters and just beat up hands. And he brought me Daryl's headband, and I put Vinny's glove in my pocket, and I put Daryl's wrist headband around my leg every night. I play with those, and it's become something like, I don't know, man. It's like baseball players wearing the same thing. Yeah. You know, maybe it's a bit of a superstition, but it, for me, it's something that I do for every show, just to have them there, you know. It's a
tribute. You're honoring their memory by bringing a piece of them with you.
Exactly.
Wow.
And people may think that's people may think that's goofy, but no. I don't.
That's great. So every show you have those items
every show
on you.
Every show.
How long was the discussion of the reunion going before it was finally decided to do it?
Well, we don't call it a reunion. Call it a celebration. But we would, I mean, I would talk to Philip, you know. Philip's the one who called me when Vinny passed. He called me and told me when it happened. So I would always keep in touch with Philip and a little bit Rex here and there. Rex kind of was more, just, you know, kind of stayed by himself. Didn't reach out as much in the last couple of years. Here and there he did, which is funny because now Rex and I are so close, which makes me happy. So Philip called me to discuss it, you know, what he was thinking, what my vibe on it was. And I immediately said, yes, you know, yes, I want to do this. The time was right.
And Zach was on board at that point, or that was
he wasn't
the next
he
call
wasn't on board yet. Zach was the next call.
All right. So coming down to Australia, is there anything you're looking forward to shopping? Any sort of collectibles you're looking to bring back home from Australia on this trip?
It's funny because every time I come down to Australia, you guys have a certain collection of Simpson things that we don't have here. I remember the first time I went, there was a series of like clothing that we would never get here. It was like pajamas and things like that. So I can't wait to see what I'm going to get when I come down here this time. The first time I went, I got a Krusty the Clown tattoo. We were doing an in-store, a record signing, and this girl comes over to get something signed, and she shows me her leg. And it was like an amazing amount of tattooing on her leg, but it was so good. And I'm like, oh my God, like, where did you go to get that? She's like, my boyfriend right here. And met him, and I'm like, dude, I want a Krusty the Clown tattoo. And he's like, okay, let's do it. So after the in-store, I went to go to his shop and got a Krusty the Clown tattoo.
I've always
said impulse.
That's the best way to get a tattoo is right on the spot. Otherwise, yeah, you could talk yourself out of it. You don't want that to happen. I've always wanted an itchy and scratchy one.
That's another good one.
Got other parts of the body. Maybe that's what you'll get this trip.
I'll think about that.
Yeah. All right, Charlie, anything you want to talk about we haven't talked about?
No, I'm looking forward to seeing, all the people in Australia again. I'm very excited about it. So, yeah, man, as far as Pantera, the band, right now, we're so stoked to come down and play. The band hasn't been there in probably what, 20 mm-hmm. something years. So looking forward to it.
People going out of their mind. I saw someone with the Pantera shirt this weekend and I said, you going? And I didn't even have to say where. I said, are you going? They're like, oh yeah. So, all right, Charlie, again, thank you so much for coming on the show and safe travels on your way down here. We will be looking forward to your coffee and your music, and maybe you'll even get another tattoo while you're here. I want to make sure everyone knows Chafed GBI Record Store Day. There's limited supply. There's 3,000, 3,500, somewhere around there. Dave Grohl, Charlie Benante, Scott Ian doing The Regulator, an amazing Bad Brain song. I can't wait to hear their rendition. Available only on Record Store Day. You're going to have to grab them quick. This one is definitely going to sell out. Chafed GBI. And for those of you lucky enough to be in Australia, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, and Adelaide, Pantera will be at Knotfest late March. Make sure you show up there and bring some boots because the pit's going to get mighty dusty. Charlie, thanks again for your time, mate, and we'll see you down under.
Thanks, Nate. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You too. Cheers. Oh man, what a nice dude. Can't wait to welcome him to Australian shores. Again, that's Knotfest, Australia, Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne, and they're doing a sideshow in Adelaide. Google them up and grab tickets if they're still available. And again, don't forget Chafed GBI on Record Store Day. Limited vinyl run. Grab one if you can. And you help members of Bad Brains in the process. It's a fantastic deal. Chafed GBI, The Regulator. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.